Back at it, you and I together, chatting it up, brand new week, Monday, March 24th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. I open up the show debating the possibility of an eventual mileage tax as Connecticut's gasoline tax revenues are dropping with the increasing popularity of electric and hybrid vehicles as well. Independent Party of Connecticut Treasurer John Fahan stopped by to chat about his continued call for more information regarding who released security video connected to the current Bridgeport absentee ballot case, while CT News junkie, columnist, and Substack.com blogger Terry Cowkill dropped by to talk about news that so-called Trump derangement syndrome might actually exist. So you undoubtedly heard some of the protesters that showed up right around here, Fairfield County, on over the weekend. The Tesla Service Center, it's not actually a dealership, but the Tesla Service Center, you know what that is. A lot of you do, on Route 1 there in Milford. It's where you take your Tesla to get serviced. Therefore, the Tesla Service Center. Even a dummy like me can get that right. Anyway, yeah, and it was a good protest, folks. You heard, and you've heard the audio all day here on WICC. Our buddy, our pal Eric from the morning show went out over the weekend and got that. And it was a nice protest. You heard very interesting people there. We spoke to four or five of them. You've been hearing them all throughout the day. They didn't burn any cars. They didn't scratch any cars. They had speakers. They conducted themselves the way you're supposed to conduct yourself at a peaceful protest. But it got me thinking again, and I see this story that popped up here. And is the use of an electric vehicle, an EV, we're not talking necessarily about hybrids because they do need some gasoline. But again, with all due respect, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, the 333-9422 call or text. If you can't call for whatever reasons, give me a text. Is all this, is a byproduct of this anger, maybe hatred, you could say, at Elon Musk, and the hatred and anger now focused on Tesla, is this now waking people up to another problem with EVs? That a lot of blue-leaning states are starting to realize, including here in Connecticut. Is that neighbor of yours who's driving an EV, are they getting off scot-free, and does it make you angry? Because again, and there's a story out of California that's interesting today, you know that buddy of yours across the street's got that brand new Tesla, hey, that Model S, that Model 3, that Model X, that Model Y, nice and spiffy, but he or she, they ain't paying any state gasoline tax. And I see a lot of people now who are in tune with what's going on with Tesla, especially in blue states. You know, they're sitting here saying, hey, wait a minute. Yeah, my buddy told me, or my next door neighbor's girlfriend or wife told me, yeah, the part they love about the EVs is that they don't buy any gasoline. But wait a minute now. Oh, wait a minute now. That means they're not paying the per gallon tax. Now, you know, everybody, just about every state, I think, has a state-level gasoline tax, right? So you have the price you pay for the gasoline, you have the federal tax, and then you have a state-level tax. Now, currently here in Connecticut, your state gasoline tax is 25 cents. Whether you buy 1 gallon, 5 gallons, or 100 gallons, you're paying 25 cents a gallon for the state gasoline tax. And remember, during COVID, they lowered it down to 20 cents, big deal. Then it went back up in steps to 25 cents. So again, you can do the math. Even I can do this. It's pretty easy. So if you buy 10 gallons of gas, say averaging $3 a gallon, it's cheaper now. But for my feeble math skills, you know, if you're buying 10 gallons at $3 a gallon, not bad. $30, and yet $2.50 of that out of the $30 goes to the state of Connecticut. Well, you know what's happening, though. The guys and gals that drive hybrids, they're still buying gas, but they're buying less of it. Less money in state coffers. If you have an EV, God bless you, great technology, I love it, you're not buying any gas. So you got two people next to each other at a pump, both buying 10 gallons of gasoline, you know, the person who has the traditional internal combustion engine is paying $30 for the gas, $2.50 for the state gasoline tax. Now, maybe there's a hybrid parked in back of her or him, and that person is only buying 5 gallons of gas. So they're getting almost the same mileage you're getting, if not better, but they're only spending, what, $12.50. I'm sorry, 25 cents a gallon times five, $1.25 on the state gasoline tax. Now, you see where we're going here. Now, in California, they're starting to say, hey, maybe we have to go with a different tax. Maybe in Connecticut we have to go with a different tax. What is that tax? Should you be taxed? Should the state, here's where I'm going here. Should the state get away from the per gallon gasoline tax on a state level? Because it's inherently unfair. Why are you paying that and your neighbor's not? Is it time to go to a road use tax or a mileage tax? California and other blue states are starting to say, hey, wait a minute, hold it. We're getting less money because of all this green technology we've been pushing. Now, a few years ago, Connecticut saw this coming, and guess what? They saw this coming, and the bottom line ends up being that, you know, they knew they had an idea here that this would come down to a possible tax, and they outlawed that. So would you be willing to, if the state got away from a per-gallon state gasoline tax, how about paying a tax instead on how many miles you drive? That's our question of the day, facebook.com/voiceofct.com. With more EVs being driven in the state, should Connecticut go to a per-mile road use tax instead of a gasoline tax? We'll run some of the numbers, how it would affect me, and how would it affect you? We'll talk about that coming up right here and more. I already know that a bunch of my fellow conservatives are going to say, what? What are you doing? You're advocating for a new tax. What in the hell is wrong with you? No. I'm advocating for a better tax, and I'm advocating for a system that is actually a fairer system. What I'm advocating for here is something now that is gaining steam in Hartford, but let me give you a caveat here. If you're going to tax people by the miles they drive, you have to severely reduce the state gasoline tax or get rid of it. Because now this is happening more and more and more, and I'm seeing articles here. All these blue states like Connecticut are suddenly realizing, hey, wait a minute, we're losing revenue on the state gasoline tax because we love our EV owners so much, we let them get off scot-free. So understand something. And I know this is going to rub some of my conservative friends the wrong way. You're going to have to tax some people somehow with driving. It just, you need transportation money. So my idea is this. Let me know what you think. We've got a couple of people hanging on here at 333-9422. Call or text. Are you okay with a per mile tax? If don't jump down my throat or up my backside, neither one is pleasant. If you either get rid of or severely cut back the gasoline tax, because you know what, I'm starting to get a little miffed here that I'm forking out for the state gasoline tax 25 cents a gallon, right? I bought my car fill-up is about 12 gallons of gas. So 12 times 25, I spent $3 the other day lawfully handing it over to the state, and every EV is zooming by me, and they're not paying anything. What the heck? Ron in Trumbull kicks us off today. Ron, how are you, sir?
Fine. Listen, if you're going to a mileage tax, who's going to monitor the mileage? Are you going to depend upon me to tell you how many miles a year I'm driving?
Well, Ron, I participated in a study about 2 years ago. They sent me a little device that plugged into my diagnostic port. So they knew, the state knew how many miles I drove. They didn't know where I was going. But this was taking the readings from my odometer and sending it to the state, and I got a printed PDF form in my email at the end of every month.
Yeah, well, that opens up another can of worms. My thought here is this.
Yeah.
One thing that's common between EVs and gas-powered internal combustion, you have to register the vehicles. The registration fee for hybrids and for EVs should be higher.
Well, Ron, thank you. I appreciate the call. And that's what some states do. So you've got to do one or the other. And Ron hit on my next step there. Look, we're losing revenue from the state gasoline tax with a hybrid, which get, I don't know, fit the equivalent of 50, 55, 60 miles a gallon, or with EVs who pay no tax. So listen, you're going to have to pay the piper on this. One way or another, you have to. Because this is why we're getting these asinine tax ideas from the Democratic majority of, well, we're going to tax your deliveries at 28 cents a delivery. Stop it. That is so bogusly stupid. It still lets EV owners off the hook scot-free. And I don't dislike EVs. That's not my point here. The point is you got to even the playing field. You folks know I do a lot of hockey play-by-play during the season here, which just wrapped up. Another great season with Sacred Heart. But how many times a game do I say, hey, the ice is tilted one way or the other? So-and-so team came out first 10 minutes. They were bombing the other team in their zone, but then the ice tilted the other way. Right now, the ice, if this was a hockey game, the ice would be tilted in favor of EV owners all the way, and hybrid owners partly. It's not their fault. It's not the car's fault. It's our legal system. Now, I did some math how much it would cost me if they go to something that's being bandied about. Instead of paying a gasoline tax, you would pay a couple of cents or one penny or a penny and a half on your total miles driven. And again, I participated in a study here, and here's the bottom line. Before we go to Joe and Weston, Joe, hang on a second. At the end, I think I did it for 4 months. At the end of the 4 months, the state sent me a printout and said, well, here's what you paid in gasoline tax, according to the average gallon. But here's how much you drove. So if we went to a per-mile tax, I would have paid about $5 a month more based on my driving. So there's an aspect of how much you pay versus making it fair. Joe has been hanging on in Weston. Joe, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm good, Joe. What's on your mind?
All right. So I don't think that is a fair, balanced way of going about taxing everybody. A lot of these commuters, if you go to New York, you buy gas in New York, you're kind of paying tax both ways. It's really not balanced to me that way. If you're buying an electric car or a hybrid, there should be, we're already paying car tax.
Yeah.
So if you're going to have another tax on electric cars or a hybrid, that would be a better way of balancing that. But people commute. There are people that drive more for their work. There are people that drive less. And mileage could be done anywhere. And to get taxed, whether you're driving in the state or out of the state, isn't really a fair way of going about it.
Joe, thank you for the calling. And you bring up an aspect of this that I have to get to momentarily. You bring up an aspect of mileage and how it weaves into EVs. And part of the reason that people are saying, hey, we're going to have to tax EV drivers some way, is EVs are much heavier. And it's been proven. I mean, those battery packs are heavy. In fact, the average sedan EV I read is close to 4,000 pounds, whereas the average internal combustion engine car is about 3,000 and change, 3,100, 3,200, something like that. So EVs are also, the reason they say a mile, a per mile charge might actually be better is that would take into effect the wear and tear that an EV is putting on the road. But what do you think? If you could, if you knew, if a bill was passed and you knew that the state gasoline tax, the 25 cents a gallon that you're paying on gas for every gallon of gas here in Connecticut is gone, would you be okay with a per mile tax, say a penny a mile, penny and a half a mile? I'll give you an example, a detailed example about how it would affect me so you can sit back and go, huh. He'd have to pay more. John Fahan is the guest right now. Now, you may have heard him a couple of days ago with Melissa in the Morning right here on WICC. John joins us now to talk about something and questions he's asking regarding the ongoing drama that is the city of Bridgeport. Hi, John. It's Paul here at WICC. How are you, sir?
Good, Paul. Good to be with you.
And now, John, you are the explain. Now, you're a former Democrat. I know that. But you are now affiliated with the Independent Party of Connecticut, not independent voters. I have to stress this. There is, for people who don't know it, the Independent Party of Connecticut. Talk a little about that.
Yes. Much of the public doesn't realize that the Independent Party of Connecticut is the third largest political party in the state of Connecticut. Mm-hmm. We have over 30,000 members. And just an interesting footnote, we became a statewide party for the first time in 2008 when we ran Ralph Nader as our candidate for president, and he made us a statewide party. And we basically been a statewide party ever since. And that means a lot of different things, but it's very important. And so I was a Democrat for years. I was on the Board of Representatives in Stamford back in the early 2000s. And so I served when Malloy was mayor. Mm-hmm. And I saw all those guys, Malloy, Jepson. I knew they wanted to move up the ranks. I saw them up close and personal, and I knew they wanted to move up the ranks in politics. So I go back a bit. I'm not really a household name in the state of Connecticut among the public, but the politicians, most of them in the state know me or have heard of me. They call me all the time for advice, and I'm happy to give, especially if they want to run or be a cross endorse on the Independent Party line.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of a known quantity throughout the state. So people who saw my name in the paper, from the governor on down and everybody in between, politicians, kind of know who I am. So wasn't a shock.
You think a lot of them, John, were they smiling at what they read, or were they grinding their teeth?
Republicans are probably happy. Democrats probably have. We're not. It depends, though.
Okay.
But you see, we have a lot to talk about, Paul. I mean,
yeah.
As you can see, there's a groundswell. The government of government administration and elections committee in Hartford has been busy since Friday. There are a lot of bills: SB 1536, SB 1156, SB 1515, 1516. A lot of these bills are covering elections and dramatically increasing the oversight of our local elections.
Now you,
so there's a lot going on.
Yeah. Now you filed a FOIA request, a Freedom of Information Act request, John. It's something that I think we all read and said, well, how is this? So the internal investigation as to not so much the absentee ballots themselves, God, that's being investigated by a bunch of people, but there was always a question of where did this video come from and who leaked that? And we kind of got this, well, we're not really sure, so we're going to stop looking. And you didn't take too kindly to that.
Well, I think that you only could speculate that they found information that they don't want to release outside the original scope. So I filed my Freedom of Information appeal as an individual member of the Independent Party because I was involved with the Gomes campaign at that time. And I just feel for the sake of transparency and that the public has a right to have confidence in our elections, what was in that report. The taxpayers paid for that report, and the excuse that, oh, well, we want to save money, really, in Bridgeport? I mean, really? They want to save the taxpayer money, and they don't want to spend any more money on this report, and that's why they canceled the report? That doesn't fly with anybody.
Now, I can't say off the record because we're on the radio, but no names or anything, please. But have you been contacted or did you run into people, John Fan, who said, hey, thanks for doing that because there's more here?
Absolutely.
Really, talk about that.
I talked to many people throughout the state, and the responses that I officially got from people were positive.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear from anyone yet in the political realm who's probably not happy with what I did, but it is what it is. I think that what you're seeing, especially with the Connecticut Mirror reporting and with the election reforms that are going to be happening, there's been proposed a municipal election accountability board,
yeah.
I think, which is great and incredible. So I think that because of the pressure that John Gomes has been putting into this for the past year and a half, and, you know, I do my little part the other day in the mm-hmm. Connecticut Post,
yeah.
that I think I've slowly been monitoring this the past year and a half, and I've been telling people, you know, this is going to get worse, and it has, and now I believe that the Democrats in the state of Connecticut realize that they have to get tougher on the oversight of these local elections, and they're finally joining the Republicans who suggested tougher bills last year, including.
But, John, let me ask you something. Yep. John, do they have to get tougher? I mean, it's a deep blue state with deep blue cities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, morally, you would like it, but let's deal in the real world here. Do they have to get tougher?
I think you have to send a message and for people to have. I mean, this is what the public wants. If you ask regular people,
mm-hmm.
you just don't go to the party people, but you regular people. I'm a working man. You know, this is not what I do
yeah.
for a living. This is a hobby for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get paid to do this. I talk to regular, real people, and this is what the people out there want.
John Fahan is the guest. He has filed a Freedom of Information Act request to get a little more regarding this kind of half message we got from an attorney with the city the other day talking about what has been found and the decision, I guess, based on money, they tell us, to not go any further with the forensic examination. Now, John, as I understand it, they did bring in a forensic computer expert, right, to kind of sniff this out. So they must have some leads somehow.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't. It's my interest is not, as I stated in the paper, is not who released it. But what happens usually with these investigations is that they go outside their scope, and whether on purpose or by accident, they get other information.
Yeah.
And the report, I agree that certain things should be redacted in the report, people's IDs and
sure.
all that.
Yeah.
So, I just think part of the reason I did this also, not only because it should be released, is that the public now understands our freedom of information laws are not as free as they should be. And that's part of one of the people ask me all the time, what's the Independent Party about, John? Do you have any ideology? And we have no ideology. That is our ideology.
Mm-hmm.
But one of our platforms is looser freedom of information laws than how they stand now. And that's one of our platforms. So I'm promoting one of the platforms of the Independent Party by doing this also. This is what we stand for. So I think that you're always on the right side of things if you're asking for more and more transparency and not less.
Absolutely. Absolutely. John, thank you. The website, by the way, ctindependence.org, ctindependence.org. Get more information about the Independent Party of Connecticut. As our guest, John Fahan, has pointed out, the third largest party now in the entire state. Hey, John, you have my email. You got the contact number. So anything comes out you want to talk about, feel free to contact me, okay?
Thank you, Paul. Good talking to you.
Appreciate it. Thank you, John. John Fahan, Fahan, he's the treasurer of the Independent Party of Connecticut. Oh, it's about that time on a Monday. All his thoughts of things national, locally here in Connecticut and worldly. Terry Cowgill, you read him at the Connecticut News Junkie, ctnewsjunkie.com. and or on Substack, his blog, Red Meat for Mushy Moderates. Terry, how are you, sir? How you feeling?
I am feeling better.
Nice.
But you know what? While some of your listeners are trying to answer the burning question of whether Governor Lamont, with his Grateful Dead T-shirt, smokes weed,
yes,
I am asking the crucial question of whether Pete Hegseth actually did stop drinking. And I think there is good reason to believe that he's off the wagon.
Why would you say that? Why would you say that?
Yeah, well, you know, if you're the Secretary of Defense and you share war plans,
I know,
in a group text with a journalist, maybe that's not a great idea. I mean, I love openness and access for journalists, but that's ridiculous.
Did you? And I guess this was toward the Houthis. Did you hear Mr. Trump's response to that? Did you hear his response?
Yeah, he said something to the effect, "Oh, I don't care much for the Atlantic anyway. You know, if that matters."
Oh, Terry, and as I was discussing, and I know you wanted to bring this up before your Substack piece. You know, Terry, I got to feel sorry for Chuck Schumer. No, I really do. And you have Jim Himes getting asked about it. I had that audio earlier yesterday from the weekend shows. Chris Murphy gets asked about this all the time. Rosa DeLauro is asked about this all the time. I mean, the poor guy just, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, Terry, if he wants to take those glasses off his nose and just fling them at somebody and say, "That's it. I'm out. I'm done."
Yeah. Well, it's too good a job, you know. I mean, if he really saw the handwriting on the wall, he might resign at some point. Did you see the interview that Bernie Sanders did with Jonathan Carl on This Week on
yes.
ABC?
Yes.
Bernie was asked about it, and he got up and tried to walk out of the room.
Did he really?
Yeah. He got. I'd never seen him do that before. He said, "Well, if you want to talk inside baseball, I don't have time. I'm going, you know, blah blah blah." And then Jonathan asked, "Oh no, I wanted to ask a different question then." And so he came back. He clearly just didn't want to answer the question. So it's pretty amazing how this goes. I'll tell you, though,
yeah.
With Schumer, I think that he was right to do what he did.
Yeah.
And I say that reluctantly because I don't think he's a leader for the times. This is not his moment.
Mm-hmm.
You saw that clip with him. I can't remember. I think it was Maxine Waters.
Yeah.
And they're going, "We will win," you know. And I just thought that is a plaintive cry for new leadership. It was crazy.
A plaintive cry. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but I think he did the right thing because I do agree with him that if they had shut down the government, then the whole federal workforce would have been even more vulnerable to mass firings. And so I think he did what he had to do, but I still think it's probably time for him to go.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, Terry, your piece here in Substack. Now, people in my neck, and I'm not that far right, but there are people in my neck of the general political woods love to use a phrase TDS, or what some of my listeners and blogger friends refer to as Trump derangement syndrome. And I'm like, you know, whatever. But you have written a rather interesting piece titled TDS, Not Such a Crazy Affliction After All. What do we have here, Terry?
Well, you know, I don't know if you remember where the term Trump derangement syndrome came from. Well,
no.
First of all, it's a clever turnabout, right?
Yeah.
So essentially what the Trump's supporters are saying is that if you don't like Trump, there's nothing wrong with him. There's something wrong with you. And it throws the responsibility for the whole thing back on the person who doesn't like Donald Trump rather than on his actions.
Yeah.
But you probably do remember where Trump derangement syndrome came from. Because
refresh me. I probably do.
Yeah. In 2003, Charles Krauthammer, the late conservative columnist and also a psychiatrist, a gifted guy, won a Pulitzer Prize. He came up with Bush derangement syndrome for people on the left who irrationally exploded every time Bush opened his mouth.
Yeah.
And so they took this and did it. But essentially, I go through a whole list of things that Trump has done in his second term, which is far more extreme than his first term, and say to myself, if you look at this list, Trump derangement syndrome isn't derangement. It's justified. And so now if somebody accuses me of having TDS, I'm like, yeah, you bet, baby. I have it. Maybe you should have it.
What kind of, and you've been blogging on Substack for a while now, and I've been thinking of just doing one just to let vent even more than I can here. You must get, Terry, I would think, maybe it's not shown in the comments, do you get a lot of people who you read stuff from the stuff you write, which sometimes I agree with, sometimes I don't, but you're a fabulous writer. Do you get comments and just go, oof, a lot, wow?
Well, sometimes, yes, not that often. Occasionally I get somebody who is extremely combative and who just hurls invective at me and at some of the other people. And I just kick them out of the sandbox. I just don't want to deal with them. I like a spirited debate, I think, and I know you do too, because you have a lot of it on your show. Mm-hmm. But I won't tolerate people get way out of line and just when they make it personal. I like to stick to the issues if I can.
Hey, finally, I know you spend most of your time in Texas right now, still with Connecticut roots. What is the deal there? Are there any insurgents, anti-Elon Musk types in your neck of the woods down there? Or are they all worried that a lot of people have guns there and tend to carry them sometimes? Has there been any widespread sort of Tesla vandalism going on there or what?
I have not seen any in the San Antonio area.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Musk is he's actually quite popular in Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Because not just because Texas leans conservative, but you know, he has that SpaceX facility down in Boca Chica, which is near Brownsville. It's in the southern tip of Texas on the beach.
Yeah.
And he employs, I don't know, thousands of people there, pays a ton of taxes. He's actually pretty popular here. So I have not heard of any vandalism. I've certainly seen the footage of it. And it's pretty frightening to me. I don't think that destruction of private property or public property is a suitable reaction to anything like that.
I
condemn it.
Yeah, I mean, power of the purse, fine. I mean, listen, the Republicans did it with Bud Light and that whole marketing campaign. And I have said, Terry, if the left wants to hurl invectives at Elon Musk and protest at their dealer, that's fine. But you know, Molotov cocktails. I mean, really, nobody hears your message when you do that. Nobody hears it.
No, because it's just the story becomes the violence and the destruction.
Yep.
And you're right. The message it detracts from the message.
Absolutely.
Did we have just a minute to?
Yeah,
talk
sure.
About
you got
Myers
about 30 seconds. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Mark Carney, who is the new Prime Minister of Canada, just did a little segment. I think it's a commercial actually for the Liberal Party with Mike Myers, who is a comedian and actor on Saturday Night Live. He was on that for a while, and it's just brilliant because Myers lives in the U.S. Carney says, oh, but you live in the U.S. You're not a real Canadian anymore. And then Carney proceeds to drill him, quiz him on a series of Canadian pop culture questions. And it goes on and on, you know, who is the host of this children's thing? And at the end, they say elbows up. And you're a sports guy. That's pretty how, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Yeah. And Terry, I got to tell you, you have Canadian roots. I've covered hockey professionally for 10, 15 years. Remember, if I'm correct, Mark Carney was a goaltender at Harvard, right? You know what they say about goalies? They're a little, you know, they
can... you've got to be, and especially, you know, back in the days of Jacques Plante when they didn't even wear masks. You know, they were completely nuts at those times. But Donald Trump has done more to increase the Liberal Party's chances of winning than anybody could, because Pierre Trudeau, it was so bad that he resigned.
Mm-hmm.
Carney comes in Trump starts this trade war, starts talking about taking over Canada by force if necessary. And Canadians are united to support the current government.
I know.
Yeah, you couldn't have invented a weirder scenario.
Yes, weird. Hey, Terry, thanks. Terry Cowgill, as always. Read him at Substack.com and at the Connecticut News Junkie. Terry, be good. Continue the rehab, and we'll talk next week. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Paul.
All right. Thanks.